And welcome to In-Game Chat for Saturday, February 27th, 2016. It is Season 10, Episode number 9. I'm Scott.
I'm RJ.
And I'm Nathan.
And welcome to the show, everybody. If you'd like to get in touch with us, or if you'd just like to talk to Nate, you can, 334-272-9228, since he is the one answering the phones this week. Give him a call. Hand us a call. 334-272-9228. Check out ingamechat.net for all the links to get in touch with us. You can find us on Twitter at InGameChat. You can also find us on Facebook at InGameChat. You can email us, everyone, at InGameChat.net. And you can find us on Twitch right now with the camp feed. Just go to twitch.tv. There's a little search box up at the top. Type in InGameChat, and you will find us. So you can watch us and listen to us, as well as joining the chat room live while we broadcast. A little benefit to watching this episode, maybe not live, because, I mean... Nate? What are you doing, Nate? You get to see things like this whenever you watch live. That's one of the benefits. Possibly other things. I'm nervous now.
I don't even know what your thing was connected to.
It's just over the cord, that's all. And then you knocked it off. It's fine. Don't worry about it. One of the benefits to watching the live episode for this week is that coming up in the second hour, we have an interview with Barry Mead from Fireproof Studios. And it's a pre-recorded interview. We recorded it last Sunday. And so put together some video that you can watch while you're listening to the interview, if you happen to be able to do that. Obviously, if you're driving, you can't really do that, but whatever. So, yeah, we got that coming up. I'm going to talk about the Vive, because we got a price deal on that. Nate and I played a new game called Super Hot. I played a little bit of Far Cry Primal last night. It came in from Gamefly.
Oh.
Finally. Like, it shipped on Monday, and I got it yesterday. That's not...
Wow.
Yeah. It's not normal for them.
I'd report it.
Do what?
You can report it.
Well, I mean, I got it.
Well, they want to know their shipping times.
Yeah, I guess I could. Yeah, and let them know. But so, that was just... It was really weird. Anyway, before we get started with that, we have a guest in the studio. Her name is Amber, and she is here. Amber, tell us a little bit about... a little bit about yourself, really. I know it's one of those weird things. It's like a game show. Where are you from? So, I hear you're doing whatever. So, you work over at GT South, which RJ frequents quite a lot. What do you do there?
I am the nighttime weekend bartender. And I tend to work on the weekdays sometimes, but usually I'm there every Thursday.
Are you the one that sets up the tournaments and all the little fun things going on over there?
All of the bi-monthly tournaments that we have are randomized, and I set those up.
So what's the tournament going on this week? Is there something going on this week?
Every Thursday we have a retro tournament that starts around 10:30 at night, and that's randomized. It's something that we used to play when we were growing up that used to either frustrate us or we enjoyed a lot.
Yeah.
So we torture the people that come in there, and they get to play it.
And what about Friday nights?
Fridays are usually reserved for our bi-monthly tournaments that we do.
Mm-hmm. What was the last one that you did?
We did, we did a Smash Brothers tournament.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the next one that you're doing?
We're going to do Marvel vs. Capcom 3.
Okay, and when is that?
That will be... sometime next month. We do Hearthstone bi-monthly too. That's set in stone that we do that every mm-hmm. 2 months. So it randomizes every other month that we do something different.
Yeah. RJ, did you went to, was it the Street Fighter V tournament that they had last week?
Yes.
How did that go, considering the situation with Street Fighter V? You said it was tournament ready, though, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, tournament ready because it functions really as a competitive play. You can play two people playing against each other fine, playing online fine. Yeah. So in tournament terms, the game is fine and ready to go. Just all the other little things like challenge modes, shops, things of that nature are not done yet, and that'll come out in March and probably fully done around June sometime. Yeah. But in terms of competitive play, it's ready to go as is, with little tweaks here and there that Capcom will be doing for the next few days, weeks, months, whatever.
Yeah. So, Amber, you work at a gaming-centered place, but what kind of gaming do you do personally?
I play, actually recently I've been playing a lot more Wii U than anything. I have a 6-year-old son, and we enjoy playing the new games that come out. Like we've got Mario 3D World.
And buy your kid new games.
Yeah. Buy my kid new games, Gina.
You're buying them for your kid,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
sure.
Totally.
Yeah. Right.
I also have an Xbox One and a PC, and I tend to not buy the games new on those, but I will get them eventually. Like, I just got Battlefront the other day, and I've been playing it, so.
Yeah. I'm the same way on some of the console things, because the PC titles we can find cheap, because somebody just said in the chat room, STM Fuller says, super hot, hopefully he didn't pay full price for it. $25 is hell of expensive. And we didn't pay full price for it. There was a truck in Brazil that
hit a pothole
and some stuff fall off. Yeah, what did I get? $9? I paid $9 for Super Hot. And then they sent me a review code, so we had two copies. I gave Nate the other one so he could try it out and so we could play it. So we will be talking about that. So all right, you play Wii U. What was the last thing you played?
Actually, I bought Paper Jam, Mario Luigi Paper Jam for the 3DS.
Okay.
That was the last thing. I started playing it. It's very reminiscent of Mario RPG that mm-hmm. used to be on Super Nintendo. So yeah. I like it so far.
What's your favorite game? Is there some game that
of all time
holds a special place? Yes.
I'm sure there's
a multitude.
I actually have a favorite game ever. It was a game that came out for, the version that I played was on PlayStation 1, and it was called Lunar Silver Story Complete. It's an RPG. And it had very quirky characters, but I loved the plot and the story of it. And that really was like the first game that I sat down and completed all by myself with no help from any game reviews or anything like that.
How old were you when you played that?
12.
Okay.
Maybe. Something
like I'm that. Sure there are people that, see, I'm not familiar with that game, but I'm sure there are people who are and were probably curious at what age you accomplished that feat.
I want to say 11 or 12. I used to, I grew up playing Nintendo, but I always had older brothers and sisters that would help me on those. So,
I can't pick one favorite. It's very tough for me to pick one favorite. If you come into the house, you'll see all kinds of different game. Like you'll see in the video, I took pictures of because the Fireproof guys used to work at Criterion,
right.
So I had to talk to them about that for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll see Burnout memorabilia, then you'll see Uncharted memorabilia, then you'll see Legacy of Kain memorabilia. So there's not, it's just, you'll see Myst, lots of Myst memorabilia. It's just hard for me to pick one single game that I can be a fan of. the Wii U, we don't have a lot of experience with the Wii U here. We had a guy on the show, Dennis, who did have some experience with the Wii U, but he hasn't been on in a while, which we really should fix. So what do you find yourself playing a lot on the Wii U?
We have a lot of the Mario games.
Yeah.
Mario Kart,
Mario 3D World. That was most of what I got out of the GameCube experience was Mario Kart Double Dash. And it was a fun time playing that multiplayer. And then that was it. It was like, if the Mario games got multiplayer in it, we're going to play it. And so Mario Tennis, we played that, and it was Mario Soccer or Mario something else.
Super Strikers.
Super Strikers, and they did a baseball one, too. It was Mario
I remember, but I can't
baseball
think of the title right now.
I can't remember what it was, but yeah. We just found ourselves playing a lot of Mario games. Never Mario Party.
I've never played Mario Party in my life.
Never Mario Party.
That's so sad.
Well, the beneficial thing about the Wii U is you have the Wii console on it, so you can go in and you can download all those retro games that they've got available for Nintendo and Super Nintendo. I went through there and found games that I haven't even heard of in, like, 20 years or so. Like, yeah. Starman was a game on there that I played when I was growing up and forgot all about it. And then there it was, and I downloaded it.
That game for me would be Kid Ninja or Mighty Bomb Jack. I can remember going into... Well, actually, this is interesting for those who are listening who are local. And by the way, I've been under the weather, so my voice sounds kind of nasty. So I apologize. Where Retro Game Planet is right now, a very, 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 very long time ago, there was a movie gallery in that shopping center in practically where he is right now. And I would go in there and I would rent Mighty Bomb Jack and I would take it home and I would play it. Then I would have to take it back and then I would re-rent it out, take it back home, play it. And so that was one that I was massively interested in whenever I could do this on the Wii, because I used to have a Wii. Mm-hmm. I recently got my Wii back and was trying to convert it into, I was trying to homebrew it and put a bunch of old games on there. And just have it a all-in-one type console for my retro stuff. The story behind that is that I went through all the trouble to do it, tested it with Super Mario Bros. 3. It worked. Seriously, I bought a brand new hard drive. I had to buy a memory card reader. Had to do all this stuff just to get it to happen. It worked. And then I didn't do anything else. It was like I just got it to work. And that was as far as I said, hey, I got it working. And then, all right. I'm going to go play this other game. I'm going to go play my PC now. Yeah. Well, it's great to have you here, and thank you for coming. Feel free to chime in on anything that you've got opinions on, stuff like that. So don't be shy. Don't be quiet.
I'll try.
Just jump in and and call us on the crap. So, but you're only here with us for the first hour, though.
Yeah.
So the interview that we got coming up with Barry Mead and Fireproof, that takes place at the top of the next hour. There is video in there, and there is video of the Room series. The Room, of course, is a puzzle game. For those of you who are curious and maybe wondering if there's any kind of spoilers, there's not. I used, for Room 1 and Room 2, I used the tutorial levels to show off video from that, so there's not really any way to be spoiled in that situation, because it's a tutorial. They're telling you what to do. And then for Room 3, I used footage that Fireproof gave me, which I felt didn't constitute as a spoiler. And then I also used footage online and mixed it up so you really didn't see any kind of solutions or any kind of ways that works. So just be mindful of that when it comes time for that video. The big news that we had was last week we made speculation on the Vive and how much it was going to cost. I was putting it at about 1,000. And where were you putting it at, Nate?
It's at 850.
You got the. Did you have a price, RJ, at all?
I knew it was that I wasn't picking it up.
Yeah, no.
He said expensive.
Yeah, and I can't remember. I don't remember what Matt's was.
700.
Seven, yeah. So you got the closest on that. You don't win anything. I got your controller out in my car. You can win that back.
Okay.
The one you let me borrow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it comes out for, what is it, 800?
Yeah.
That's what it said? $800 for a VR system. What, what did you think about that?
I mean, it's what I expected.
Yeah. It honestly, it doesn't seem so bad considering the Rift was at 600.
Well, and I think it also helped that we were kind of expecting higher than, yeah. You know, with the Rift, we were maybe 300-400.
Right.
Probably,
we pushed our expectations up there
probably,
pretty.
Probably more than 500.
Yeah, we pushed our expectations up pretty high so that we wouldn't be disappointed whenever it came in, if it came in higher or when it came in lower. So, yeah, 800 for, you also get the controller, the motion controls with it.
Yep.
The two camera setup. So I kind of think it's probably going to be the same as what the Rift will be once you.
I think it'll still be a little bit more, just a tad bit more, but
what,
I mean,
maybe $50 or something.
Yeah, might be.
What do you think those controllers are going to run for the Rift?
I've heard anywhere from probably like $100.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too, but then again, the Rift was 600 when when they said it was only going to be it'll be around 350.
I mean, if I'm going to get one, I'm going to get the Rift.
Really?
Yeah. I'm sorry, not the Rift, the Vive.
Oh, okay.
I was in the wrong, the Vive.
Why is that?
I like that it has the Steam backing it. Mm-hmm. I prefer that. I like the seeing the controllers, I mean, I haven't held them, so I can't for sure confirm, but I think I like the Vive's controllers better. They seem like they'd fit my hand more, and I like the idea of the box style.
One of the general consensus we had on the Vive was that it just performed better than all the other ones available right now.
I mean, he's the only one that's tested it.
Looking at the reports and everything like that.
Well, technically, yeah. the Oculus is better.
Yeah, it's a little too close to. The Oculus has some pros, and mm-hmm. then the Oculus has some cons. The cons that the Oculus have is where the pros are for the Vive. But the pros of the Oculus is where the negative part of the Vive is.
Mm-hmm.
So they're in a way, it's almost like you're good going either way. How much do you want to spend right now, if you're going to jump into it? How mm-hmm. much do you want to spend right now, and what do you want out of it? Do you want motion controls and want to spend the $800 for them? Go for the Vive. Do you not need that? Do you not need the ability to move around? You can just do that with a controller, and all you need is the headset to, you know, look around and that sort of thing. The Oculus is going to suit you. Then there's other things. Do you want a better resolution? And even the resolution's not. I don't think the resolution's a difference. I think it's the clarity, the lens, because the Oculus uses an OLED.
I think the Rift has slightly higher.
I thought it did too. But the situation.
But it's not enough to be like, oh my goodness.
I know it's too slim to call. You know,
okay.
It almost comes down. And this is the problem that you can't do right now because the library is just not there. It almost comes down to whatever we would say when everybody would call in and ask you, do we want to? Do I get my kid a PS4? Do I get my kid an Xbox One? Well, find out what your kid wants to play. Then go wherever that's at. If it's on both systems, then you go for that cheaper system, which would have been at the time. Would have been a PS4. Now they are kind of the same. But, you know, go find out what you want to play and then pick the system that has the games that you want. That will come into play later when the price drops and there's a lot of people who will be calling up and asking about that. There are a lot of people who will be looking online to find out which one's better. Right now, nobody's looking online to see which one's better. I think everybody's looking online to see which one costs the cheapest or cost more so that they can go with the cheaper option, I guess. And we're still not done. Sony's got to reveal theirs. I don't like to put Sony's VR into the class of Oculus and Vive just because I've experienced their VR and does not hold a candle to what they're doing with the Oculus and the Vive. However, for the home based systems, that's going to do a major amount of goodwill for VR, I think, just to getting the general population either on or off that train. And they're going to decide how that's going to play out. And that's going to be decided upon how they price this thing come E3, and what they decide to do.
I did think it was really interesting that, right now, if you pre-order the Galaxy S4 or the other model of
get
that.
Something free, right? You get a free Gear VR.
Yeah. Which I thought was...
Those aren't too shabby, actually. Somebody brought one here to the studio one morning, and you know, I put it on, and it was just like when I put on VR for the first time. Every single experience I've had with VR has always felt like the first time I've ever experienced it. It has blown me away every single time I've gone into the space of VR. And I've enjoyed every single minute of it. I don't know which way I'm going to go for the Vive or the Oculus when the prices come down.
Yeah, either way for me, it'll be about a year and a half.
Yeah, it's got to fall on the price. Sony recently announced that the extended box thing that comes with the VR, they sort of announced what that does, and I was really surprised to learn that it doesn't really do much of anything. It processes 3D audio, and it helps the image to be displayed on a TV. So all the hard work is in the PS4. It passes it through this box. The stuff that needs to go to the headset goes to the headset with the PS4's processing behind it. And then the box takes the image that it's sending up there to the headset, does some like scale downing or something, you know, downscales a little bit or something like that so we can display it to a television set. And that's what their stance is as to all it does. I thought it was going to do more because I've tried the PlayStation VR and it's not really great. Then again, I've also experienced the Oculus and the Vive. If the PSVR was the first I had ever experienced, and likely the only that I would, it gets the job done. So maybe I really can't say too much. I guess I really have to separate that. It's a lot like what we used to do with the console wars, is that Microsoft and Sony were over here, and Nintendo was over here by themselves. They weren't in a competition with the other two guys. And I'm kind of seeing that that's probably the case here. Sony looks at themselves as, we're not competing with the Oculus, we're not competing with the Rift, that's PC stuff, we don't care. We're here to enhance our home system, we're here to put out another product that hopefully will increase the attachment rate to, you know, PS4s and this, and sell more consoles, get more people on board, and do some great things. So, I don't know, it's going to come down to price for them, how they're going to price that. And something that I wrote about in the last week's episode was how to convey VR to people. It was tough to convey to you, and I said, you just got to try it. You got to put it on and try it out. For anybody that hasn't tried it, I hear a lot of skepticism, a lot of speculation, a lot of this is just a fad, it will pass.
And I think that comes from 3D.
It does, because that's the closest relative you've got to what you're experiencing here is 3D. Well, look at what 3D did. You know, fell on its face, which I don't buy into that at all.
I don't know. The 3D on the 3DS, I have maybe used it for like two games, and one was an RPG.
Yeah, I had a 3DS as well, didn't use it for a single thing.
So I don't think 3D ever failed, I just don't think it ever took off. That's all it was.
Mm-hmm. It looked really cool. Some of the stuff, like, you would turn it on just to see how it looked on there. Mm-hmm. Like, Bravely Default was a pretty, like, cutscene heavy game, mm-hmm. and if you cut on the cutscenes, it looked great, but if you're playing it, it kind of just wear on you after a while.
Yeah, I really, two things wrong with that 3D, the 3D of the 3DS. Number one, it wasn't always as effective as it should have been. Most games really didn't take advantage of it. You know, it's
like the Vita touch panels.
Yeah. Or the motion controls of the six axis from PS3 days.
Yeah.
We're going to put it in all of like our launch systems or our launch games. I think Heavenly Sword.
The earlier 3DS games, like Street Fighter when it was on 3DS and Resident Evil Revelations, they looked really good in 3D. And then it just kind of went down.
I know. It never really got that traction that it needed to. The two things I was going for was, number one, it was nice and gimmicky, and it was like, hey, come here, look at this. And you didn't have to put glasses on somebody. Just fire up the slider and be like, look, it's moving. And the AR stuff that they did with it I thought was really cool. Mm-hmm. When you put the little blocks on the ground and scan them and whatever. I thought that was pretty interesting. The other problem with it, it ran the battery down massively. Mm-hmm. So it was always best just to keep it turned off because you wanted to play more than you wanted to experience the 3D. But in the regards that I hear when people talk about the 3D, it's not necessarily the 3DS, just 3D in general. I got a 3D movie dropped in price and I bought it this week and it came in. If I can get a 3D film, I'll grab a 3D.
I mean,
yeah, copy.
My best viewing of I saw The Force Awakens four different ways.
Yeah.
And the best was the IMAX 3D.
Mine too.
I never got to see it in 3D.
I saw it in Birmingham at the Dome.
That's different, yeah.
For the 70mm experience. Yeah. I saw it there, but I never actually went to see it in 3D.
Yeah, its 3D was just enough to not be annoying. But enough to really, like, when the Star Destroyers were flying across, mm-hmm. it really came out to you flying through space. That was the best.
Well, you know, that's Disney now, so I'm quite sure that they're going to release that in a 3D package of some kind.
I think you can only buy it one way. It comes with everything.
Oh, okay.
Because they just announced that this week about the whole
packaging. How it's going to be released?
It's $20, and you get Blu-ray, a DVD of the movie, and an extra copy of digital download, mm-hmm. and bonus features.
No 3D?
No, I don't believe so.
Man. Might have to check the UK market or the China market. And see
I'll double check, but I don't believe I ever saw that on there.
Like I said, if it's got 3D in it, I always like to jump on the...
But I did think it was unique that it just comes with DVD and Blu-ray.
Yeah, I really like 3D. I have it at the house, and I don't use it so much in my games anymore, but if I've got movies that are in 3D, I'll get the 3D version of it. It comes with a regular copy anyway, and if I don't feel like watching it in 3D, then I don't have to. But if I do, at least I've got the option, and I've got the complete setup to do so. And I enjoy it. I never got tired of it. Never felt like a fluke or like a fad. Never felt like a fad to me. And I don't see the VR situation ever turning into that either. Wish I could say why.
It's where gaming's going eventually,
maybe?
Right? That's the only way it can go.
Well, they've got a problem right now, and that is for people who have corrective vision.
Oh yeah.
That's a problem. Just like 3D was a problem for most people who needed glasses or had to wear glasses and stuff like that. 3D was a big issue. This is also going to be a big issue for a lot of people who just can't experience that because of the vision that they've got. Some people can't see stereoscopic, and so there's going to be those situations. That's a small percentage, I think, of people who are going to be, you know, out of the circle there to be able to experience this stuff. But I think they've got a ways to go before they get to that. Not necessarily norm, but before they get to that acceptance from the mass people. There's a word I'm trying to think of.
The masses.
And no, not the masses. I have a problem thinking of words. The majority, those people. Those people. So, yeah, we'll see about that. Did you look that up?
It does come with. On the Blu-ray.
3D?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, nice. Good job. SCM Fuller in the chat room said somewhere in here that I saw. Yeah, he said, Cy, I want to live in Alabama now. That looks like a fun bar. He posted a link to GT South in our chat room.
It is a very fun bar.
You really want to live in Alabama now, do you, SCM Fuller? All right, buddy. I've heard what you said about Alabama whenever you've listened to our commercials during the break. I don't know where he's from, actually. He'll have to tell us where he's from.
He's from Russia.
No, I don't think Russian Man is in there today, Russian Man. Let's see
what?
Who is. You know who it is.
Russian Man.
Is it Josh who played with us? Destiny.
He's from Germany.
Oh, he's Germany. I thought he was Russian. What did I think? Yeah.
Completely different.
That's totally different. Close. AC Wraith, Arioka, Cavalier UK, Digital Hughes, Jason's in. Oh, great. Evans, 04111, SDM Fuller, Taxius 59, The Wuzman Returns, and Uncle Elias. Also, Medusa's Mirror. Hopefully you're going to stay in there for the whole show, because I want to talk to you about Tomb Raider coming up in a bit. And Lavos is also hanging out in the chat room as well.
SDM Fuller lives in the Northeast.
Oh, that's right. According to according to Matt, Illinois. That's the Northeast. So... Well, let's go around the room and see what everybody's been playing. RJ, we'll start with you.
It's been nothing but Street Fighter V this week.
Preparing for final round?
Not quite. I haven't signed up for the tournaments for Street Fighter V.
But you have signed up for tournaments, though,
right? I have signed up for tournaments. I'm in Ultra Street Fighter IV and Guilty Gear in final round. So eventually, I'm going to have to put five down and start getting back into those two before
comes in. Any news on if he's capping the... signups?
I haven't heard anything yet. The only thing I've heard so far is that I believe legacy mode controller use is going to be banned from the tournament. Basically, using your PS3 control stick hooked up to the PS4.
That was going to be my next question.
Through the default PS4 controller, they're going to take that out. I think there's a time constraints and some of the performance issues that has to do with legacy mode.
Yeah.
Because during our tournament at GT South, one of the things that delayed the tournament, and it was we were in the double digits, the teens of people who signed up for it, but the delay came from when we had to like get the PS4 controllers hooked up, and then you had to open up another account as guest and then create that account, then have that hooked up to the controller. And it was a nice little delay between matches. Like sometimes we had to restart the system or start over from scratch, like restart the default tutorial mode that comes in when you start the game anew. And we had to go through that and then skip through that. And that took a lot of time to just get the two people to sit down and start playing together. So I think that's one of the things that made the organizers for Winter Brawl, which is going on now, and Final Round coming up in March, they just don't want to do a legacy control mode for the whole tournament. So that's all I've been hearing about the tournament so far.
And so anything else that you've been playing, just Street Fighter 5?
Nope, just that. Mm-hmm.
I know we went over this earlier, Amber, but what have you been playing the past week?
The Paper Jam, Mario and Luigi Paper Jam. It just came out, I want to say, like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
My son played it and finally let me play it, so on my 3DS. I've got that, and I have a game that I constantly play every day, and I've been playing it a lot more lately. It's a mobile game,
yeah,
and it's called Final Fantasy Record Keeper. And I've literally played it every day since it came out.
Is this one of those free-to-play games, or is it?
It's free-to-play, and it's not one of those games that you have to pay every now and then to get special stuff. You literally, like, you collect mithril, and you do rare draws, and you get rare weapons that are unique to each character. I've played it every day, and this is, like, their one-year anniversary.
Is it available on
iOS and Android?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so iPad, iPhones, that sort of thing, tablets, mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else?
I've also got Battlefront that I've been playing. I just finished the story. I like Heroes versus Villains as far as online play goes. We mm-hmm. play that a lot.
Nate, over to you.
Super.
Well,
I know.
Yeah. We're going to get the super hot in just a moment. Outside of that.
Yes. Elite Dangerous.
Of course.
I've been hooked on that. Yeah. Been having super fun, which meant you would hate that game so much.
Do you know why? No. Do you know why I haven't played that game?
It's not even bought that game. It's that.
Here's the problem, though. VR. I will want to play it because that's all. True. That's the most fun I've had in any VR setting is when you put me in a cockpit and put me in space.
Well, I was totally thinking of you the other night, having to do this because I wanted to get a new ship because all of us are doing some PvP tonight. So, to get the new ship, I had to take my current ship that I'm using to smuggle. I had to fly all the way back to the other station, which took me about 15-20 minutes.
Did you have to do a lot of backtracking? Is that why it made you think
of me? Hold on. You're going to hate this. So I had to fly to the other station, but I wanted to make sure I had enough money to buy a ship there to leave my other ship there so I could fly to another station to buy it at a 15% discount so I could sell that ship, buy my new ship so I could fly it back to the other station. You can't just swap, you know, or artificially go to another station. Like, you always have to physically go to the current station you're at. So
yeah,
and there's no fast travel. And then once I took that ship, the new ship, it's absolutely horrible on gas. It's like driving an SUV. So to get to the other place, it took me about 45 minutes to go back home because to constantly get fuel, I had to stop and fly around stars and stuff. So just to get one ship and then go to the other place and come back took me about an hour and a half. And I was like, Scott would absolutely hate this. But then James, I completely forgot he told us this. He told us that where we're going to be doing the whole thing tonight is at another place about 100 light years away, which is a 30-minute drive. But in the big old SUV that I'm using, I mean, I have to stop it at like every 4 stars.
So you're gonna have to get on earlier.
I already did it.
I did it
this morning. It took me like 40 minutes to fly to where we were. But the thing is like if I want to do anything else, I'm stuck there. So I'd have to fly all the way back to the other place to get my other ship. And the other ship's my moneymaker. So the whole time I was thinking, I was like, Scott's going to hate this.
I'm going to eventually be in that world whenever, you know, I get the VR situation going, because it's just beautiful the way it's done.
And you can get it for like $15.
Yeah. So, well, doesn't it? It comes with. Well, no, it's a version of.
I'm talking about the basic version,
right?
Just for
Around. There's a version of Elite that comes with the Oculus Rift.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
You'll have to look that up because it's Elite Ascension or something, Elite Dangerous Ascension or something like. I can't remember what it's called. But it's got a subtitle.
Okay.
And it's for the Rift. So that's, anything else that you've been playing outside of super hot?
I've been wanting to play Firewatch again though.
Did you ever get back into Tron? Did you ever try Tron again?
Yeah.
Okay,
I played that some more.
Yeah. As for me, I played, I spent a ton of time in Tomb Raider on Sunday, and got a good ways of that. I wanted to ask Medusa's Mirror, who is in the chat room, and she'll get with me whenever, however long the delay is on the chat room. I got to the part where you meet back up with those people.
Do you have any guns?
Oh yeah, I got guns now.
Now you learned how to use them.
That's the stupidest mechanic in the world. I had a problem last week about Tomb Raider where I'm running through the woods with a bow and arrow, killing people who have guns, but I'm not picking up their guns. Yeah. Why would you just... She's already stranded and needing to survive. Why are you not picking up these people's weapons after you kill them? Because game. That's why. But yes, I have guns now. Oddly enough, though, I still kind of prefer the bow and arrow.
Of course.
Depends on the situation, yeah. But I still kind of prefer the bow and arrow.
That's all I ever used in the first one. I never used my other guns.
Yeah. So I'm at the part. I'm at a part where I guess I can explain it to her. There's these gigantic double doors when you come into a room that they're trying to open, and eventually I got those open. The rocks fell behind me and closed me off, and that's where I'm at right now. The actual stage is called Prepare for War, so it's letting me walk around this area. I haven't triggered the next event. So that's where I'm at. I don't know how far into the game I'm at, though. So hopefully she'll give me an update on where I'm at. So I did get that DLC for cheap from GameStop
the other day.
Yes.
Did it work for Matt?
I don't know if it did or not. I don't think he responded. I saw some people in the GAF thread saying that they started getting their codes, mm-hmm. and then I saw other people in the GAF thread saying that they just got their cancellation on the product. So I am not sure how that worked. Folks, you can't go wrong with our game deals on Reddit. Go there, sort by new, do this every single day you get up in the morning. Do it. Overnight, I found the new Tomb Raider for $17 for PC. The DLC was $10. This lasted for until about noon, and then it switched back to the regular price. Cheapest I had ever seen it. So definitely just look at that subreddit, sort by new, check it every day. You'll find some great deals on that page.
For instance, right now,
what do they got?
Destiny PS4.
It's totally free.
Free after a $15 mail-in rebate.
I mean, you got to go through Newegg. You got to sign up at Newegg. You got to pay them shipping to get it sent. But if you send the mail-in rebate, they'll send you money back, and you can get Destiny. It's not the Taken King. It's just base game, but you'll get it for completely free if you want to go through the method to do that.
So. I almost jumped on last night. It was you got all the Far Cries for 67 cents. I mean, not Far Cry. I'm sorry, Fear.
Oh, yeah, it was like 67 cents.
Fear. I almost considered it, and I was like, I'll never play them.
I thought Ubisoft was worried about being taken over by Vivendi, but apparently they don't care. Selling their games at 67, letting it all go.
Take all the keys.
It's all got to go. we're being taken over. Just here, get the product. It's all digital, so there's no product to take, but yeah. Anything else? No?
An Xbox One deal.
All right. Well, then let's talk about Superhot. We're not going to take a commercial break here because we only got like 15 minutes in the hour, and we still got to talk about Superhot. Weird game, sort of.
Yeah, it's a little bit of everything.
It's got something going on underneath, mm-hmm. that I haven't really figured. Have you looked through the other files and everything in the setting?
They're like map layouts, the stuff I was looking through.
I did it last night on the stream. Go to the videos.
Okay.
There's one of those weird. The videos are all done in whatever resolution that stuff is in, which is horrible.
The 8-bit style.
Yeah, 8-bit or even less, type of situation. But there's one that has a creepy vibe to it, with people screaming.
Oh gosh!
Like, looks like they were videotaping them screaming, and like there's this voiceover that plays over, and then the voice gets deeper and distorted, and all of a sudden they just keep screaming and screaming.
You did this at night.
I did this on the stream last night. Yeah, I totally did this on the stream. There's something underneath on this game. that I don't know yet. STM Fuller said, you know, it's not worth the $25, but there's more to it than.
I was going to say, I don't really think 25 is a stretch. I mean, because.
I think it's 20 right now with the discount on Steam.
I mean, just the uniqueness of it, I mean, to me, is completely worth. Because, I mean, it is technically a puzzle game slash shooter slash strategy.
It felt puzzly. For those who don't know what Superhot is, we should probably explain at least the mechanic.
Yes, definitely.
Of what it does. Superhot is a game, and they really try to explain this to you right when you jump in. Time doesn't move unless you move.
Well, you don't. It'll still move if you're not moving.
It's moving very, very slow.
Very slow.
Yes.
I mean, barely moving at all, but it is technically moving. But even if you just turn your camera, that's fast.
Like anything, yeah. any type of movement whatsoever.
Yeah, is a fast forward.
So when you want to look left or look right, that movement is advancing time.
Yes.
So there you go. Basically, it's you against a bunch of other guys, yeah. And they just put you in a scenario. And each level is a different scenario of dudes to kill.
It's all sort of a virtual world, like a virtual training simulator.
Yeah.
Where you're not nothing's actual real places. The items might be kind of real, but none of the people, they're all just red.
As far as we know, polygons. there's still something going on underneath.
What it really reminds me of is there's a short scary film that someone did of where a guy pulls into a town, he had been driving all night, never went to bed, and pulls into the town and goes to walk into the diner, and everyone's the store where they have wear the clothes, the dummy models.
Mannequins?
Yeah, mannequin thing.
All right, yeah.
Everything's a mannequin. And so he walks in there, like, there's just mannequins staring at him, and he's like, okay, this is kind of weird, and kind of turns around, looks back, and, like, they've moved. But everything's, like, a frame, stuck in the frame. So he turns back around, looks, and they've moved again. So then he starts to drive off, and...
So they're like the Boos in Mario.
Sort of. But then once you progress within in the short... It was just all in his
angels
head.
Angels in Doctor Who, yeah.
It was just all in his head.
Oh, okay.
And so it kind of made me think of how this was, like you're saying, it could be.
No, I had there.
But there is actually kind of a story going on, if you actually take the time to read, which I didn't like the... It was kind of annoying having to hit the keyboard to type. I just smashed the keyboard.
It's fun. You start this thing up, and then it's like, hey, you have a chat message. Press enter to start chatting, and then you press enter in this little... chat box thing pops up and a guy talks to you and then it waits for you to type. And the first question you get asked, are you playing Superhot? And so I went to type, I'm about to, right? I'm going to answer this thing. Yeah. Like I'm going to answer it. But it, regardless of what you press, the keys, it's going to type something else out. It types out whatever it's supposed to type out. And that's how you have the conversation.
But then you eventually lose control of that typing.
I don't want to get into too much spoiler stuff, but anyway, I don't really know if I'm spoiling anything or not, because yeah. I haven't really gotten far. To me, the game ends at the level that I'm at, because I can't get beyond that. I've got to figure out how to get beyond there. They put you in an elevator, which is a very closed space, and there's a guy on the left, guy on the right, yeah, and a guy in front of you. And they're all about to shoot you, and you have no gun. You have to punch one of them. Every time you hit one, every time you punch them or hit them with an object, they drop their gun. And you can grab the gun and then shoot. But I can't seem to get out of that elevator. If I go for the guy on the left who's closest, the left or the right are the closest to me. If I go for either one of them, the guy in front and the guy on the other side are firing their weapon at me, and I can't figure out how to get past it. I'm sure it's there. This is the puzzle aspect of the game. There's a little bit of map memory in the game, because
yeah, that's where the shooter kind of comes in.
Every time you lose, you just restart the chapter over, and then, you know, it's very much there's a guy, I shot him, but the guy who comes out of this side door shot me. Okay, restart. Get the guy in front. I know this guy's coming around the corner. Get him. Go outside. Do a couple of other things. Oh, there's a guy who I didn't see coming there. So then you've got to remember that he's going to pop up. And so then you start all over again and run through it. And eventually you get this. I think you can get some amazing
replays,
scenarios, and situations once you're familiar with how it works and can pull off some fancy stuff.
And what
Killstagram.com is where people have all uploaded their videos.
Yeah, I'll post that.
Yeah, Killstagram.com. What were you going to say, Nate?
I was going to say that it looks really neat when you, after you beat it, it'll just play the game in real time. Like, nothing was ever slowed down. And it's like, wow, that makes it really great. Like, I actually did something.
It's like a John Woo simulator. But you get to choreograph it in really slow motion and then let it play out. No doves, unfortunately, but somebody should mod that in there. But, you know, it was great. I had this, especially when you get the sword. That was nice.
Mm-hmm.
But I had, like, I picked up a crowbar, smashed the guy in front of me, ran out of the truck. This other guy is going to get his crowbar. I throw my crowbar at him, hits him. He throws up his crowbar. I grab it, smash his head, turn to the left. There's a guy coming at me with a gun. I throw what's left of my crowbar at him. It hits him. His gun goes in the air. I grab his gun. I shoot him. And whenever that goes in real time, you feel pretty badass when you're doing it, you know? Mm-hmm. You feel uncoordinated as all hell when you're doing it through the game because you're constantly juking and turning and all this other stuff.
I'm watching some other people's replays. You've got a lot to go.
Yeah, I know. I don't think my coordination level can handle it.
You know the one where the hallway, like the people are just immediately shooting at you and you got to run to like the corner?
Is that the one with
the
sword?
The beginning. Huh? Yes.
The sword?
Mm-hmm. There's one like that, but it's a lot longer.
Oh, okay. They call it the old boy hallway.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like that, but longer.
Yeah. There's another one they put me in where I'm in, there's just a rack of guns everywhere. And they don't give you a gun to start out with. That was difficult as well. I should go through that video that I did, and I should upload that video on YouTube and stuff and put that out there instead of talking about it so much. Great. Super Hot only took about 5 minutes for us to talk about. Now we got 10 minutes left to fill. Uncharted. You want to talk about that? Or did you have something else?
I was going to say, it really was super. I mean, I understand that you might not think it's worth $25. And we also, like you're saying, it has an underlying story.
There's something else going on. This feels like, I'm not comparing, because people run with this, and I'm not comparing it to Portal, because it doesn't have that game mechanic. It doesn't have that humor and everything else that was in it. It doesn't have that kind of writing or anything like that. What I am comparing it to is what you first thought Portal was,
mm-hmm.
where the 20 levels, okay, I'm done, until it expanded when you went kind of behind everything and it became this much larger thing.
Yeah. That's a good example.
Super Hot has that. The surface is what you're seeing people play, but at some point, possibly, I don't know, I'm not there yet, the roof is going to open up and I'm going to have a whole lot more to be thinking about or to be doing or something like that. The gameplay may never extend as far as the shooting mechanic, may never extend beyond that. But there is a ton of stuff underneath this thing. There's so many files to look into, and they seem completely random and stupid.
Yeah, it's...
But there's probably a meaning there, right?
I don't know. I mean,
I don't know yet.
I need to play through the entire game to see first.
Go look through the menu.
Yeah.
When you start it, I don't know, you're going to do your thing with Elite today. But when you start it up, next time you start it up, go through some of the, before you just jump back into the game, go through some of the menus and look at that stuff, because it seems completely out of place.
Well, like I said, the file I went through is just all map motions, and it was kind of going over map layouts.
There's a bunch of them, so I haven't looked at that
yet. Yeah, I went through like 8 or 9 map layouts, but I've never seen any of those areas before, so I was it was almost like they were being scanned.
Mm-hmm. I was hoping that Spigot would call in, because he sent us a tweet about it last night whenever he saw that we were playing it, and I wanted him to call in and talk to us about it today and kind of get his take on it as well, Brock, but I don't see him in the chat room, so obviously not calling in. But so my recommendation on Super Hot is that there's much more to it underneath the surface of it. I am determined to get beyond that level, although I was so very frustrated last night, because I had gotten further in it, like the elevator doors opened. And then there were two guys with shotguns, which didn't help my situation any.
Is it one hit dead?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
For you and for them.
Hmm, okay.
With the exception of... it's a one hit kill on you if they punch you. It's three punches to them and they're gone. Or one crowbar hit. Or one katana slash. Right? But if you just hit them with a blunt object or your fist, it takes about three to knock them completely out and to eliminate them. But anything else, a bullet touches them, they're gone. And it doesn't matter where that bullet touches them, they're gone.
Not always, but there are usually a decent amount of things to throw. So like one level, there's a pool table. So you start throwing the pool balls while they're...
Because you don't have a weapon. And it's very hard to get close to these guys without a weapon.
Especially if they have a shotgun.
A shotgun has the spread. You can see each individual
bullet
coming at you. But it's tough to dodge because those things are constantly moving. They're very slow, but they're constantly moving, and you have to get out of the way and kind of have to direct where you want them to shoot.
Yeah, because you have to think about that situation you had in the elevator, that cramped little space, three folks and one guy.
That's a tough one to do because they're regardless of where I'm going to move to have them shoot, they're shooting at me. They're point blank.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in the hallway, I only had the sword, so I was trying to get closer to this guy. So I maintained my position while he aimed towards me, and as soon as he got the shot off, all I did was sidestep over and then start going straight. And then I could get close enough to hit him with a sword. So, but yeah, so I don't know. I don't really have a final verdict on Super Hot. So I'm still putting time into it. I think it is worth more than the or around the price that they're asking for, just because I think there is more to this. If there's not, if it's all just filler, and for whatever reason I don't think that it is, then yeah, maybe it's a little overpriced.
Mm-hmm.
But so far, I think there's other stuff going on that I haven't discovered yet, so I'm not sure. The other thing we got last week was probably the final trailer for Uncharted 4. It's the story trailer. It's Uncharted. It's beautiful. It's great. It's got everything it's supposed to have. It was great to see. That was fantastic. Nobody really was talking about that. The discussion that was brought up with that was because the guys over at Ubisoft noticed that a piece of art being used in the trailer was concept art used for Assassin's Creed Black Flag. Which dealt with pirates, and Uncharted 4 deals with pirates. And for whatever reason, that was in the trailer. And it was the art. Naughty Dog owned up to it. They sent out a message saying that, you know, we screwed up. This is our fault. We don't like to do things like this. It's a mistake. We're sorry. We've replaced it. And they did. They put another trailer out and did the replacement. It's just weird how that got in there to begin with.
Mm. See, to me, I thought it was on purpose, being a pirate.
Right. You know? Maybe there was some kind of nice little, you could combine those worlds. I mean, good God, Nolan North was the voice of Desmond.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you could combine the two worlds. But it's just interesting how stuff like that gets by. Because when you're using art to take place of something else or to just fill in for the moment,
yeah.
Usually when you look that stuff up, you're not just going to Imgur and then, you know, grabbing a link and downloading whatever it was. You're going to some other place and buying the rights to use an image to put it in there. Because honestly, I'm almost positive if they hadn't used that scene in the trailer, that piece of art might have stayed in the game until they patched it out, obviously.
Yeah, I mean,
nobody noticed.
Yeah.
Nobody at Naughty Dog noticed.
I think people knew.
And would have.
I think people knew. You can't tell me no one noticed. There's no way.
They've done this before.
Without knowing?
Well, let's look back at Last of Us. They changed Ellie's features.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't really get called out on it. And they and they never admitted to it. The fact of what's the actress's
name?
Juno.
Yeah,
Juno. Ellen Page.
Yeah, Juno. Yeah, Juno. Kitty Pryde. They changed her features a little bit because she looked too much like Ellen Page, and then Ellen Page was going to be in her own game from Quantic Dream. Yeah. And then there was a guy who does maps. There was a subway map that was used in the game that was ripped straight from the creators who does those things. And he called them on it, and they had to patch in something different to change it out.
I didn't know that. I knew the Alan Page, but I didn't know that. Would it be placeholders?
That's what I was thinking might have been the Black Flag situation.
That could have been bad.
Sorry. it could have been a placeholder. That's just, let's put this here until later.
It's just really bad about forgetting their placeholders.
Yeah, but, yeah, again, if they had not used it in the trailer, I think it would have stayed in the game.
Probably, yeah.
I think it would have stayed in there. And then they would have gotten called out on it, and it probably would have been worse.
So they just need to learn to use placeholders within their own, you know.
I mean, maybe. Why use a placeholder? Why not just use a black box that says, insert art here? You know?
I mean,
art image number whatever. Then you can look at your paper. Let me find art image number whatever. That needs to be sand, beaches, this, blah, you know. I don't know. I don't code. I don't do any of this stuff, so I don't know.
I mean, it's the same way, like right now, the Star Wars trailer, it's Space Bears. Yeah, it's the same. Have you seen those images?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's the same thing. People, they love doing stupid things just to, you know, do stupid things. It's just kind of how that behind-the-scenes world works.
All right, we're going to take this call, and then we're going to go to break, because we're right up at the top of the hour here. Hello, you're on In-Game Chat. Who's this?
Hey, this is Ben. I just have a question. It's kind of off subject of what you guys are talking about. But,
okay.
But what I was wanting to know is, have you guys seen anything on the Ghostbusters coming out with a game or something? I know a lot of movies, they're going to have they usually have games that follow along with them, like Star Wars and stuff like that.
Right.
So yeah. I didn't know if you guys have heard anything on that, because I'm a big Ghostbusters fan, and, you know, I know that, you know, my thoughts is it'll probably be like Wii U or something like that, probably do it, but I'm not sure. I didn't know if you guys had anything to say on it.
No. As far as I know, there is nothing planned for the for a Ghostbusters game in relation to the film that's coming out this summer. You might see a mobile game. You might see something like that. They just recently did a mobile game on iOS and Android, and I cannot remember what the name of it is.
Is it Sanction of Slime?
No, that was Xbox.
No. That's not what it was. This was a card type game.
Oh.
You'd have to look it up. The last game that they did, obviously, and you probably are aware if you're that big of a fan, would be Ghostbusters the video game, which came out a couple years back.
More than
a couple years back.
Yeah.
2009.
Well, a couple of years can when be that like came out. 20 years, in my opinion. That's what I am. Like a couple of days ago means, you know, last year. So
right, exactly. Yeah, the older you get, it changes. I know. But that came out in 2009. That's the last we've got of any kind of Ghostbusters game. There's been like the Ghostbusters arcade game, or I say arcade, but it was it's an arcadey style game, Sanction of Slime, that Nate mentioned. And then there's been another another free-to-play Ghostbusters game that was released, and then they released the card version of a game for them that's all mobile, that's on iOS and Android. But there is, as far as I know, there is nobody working on a Ghostbusters game that we are aware of. You know, the same thing with Batman Superman being released. There's no tie-in game for that as well.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of odd. You usually would start seeing some, you know, like Jurassic World, they started releasing Jurassic stuff pretty quickly. You know, and the Lego stuff and all that, you know, whenever they were just talking about the game.
Lego is nuts, man. Lego's on the other side of the spectrum. You can Lego everything.
Yeah, that's true.
As you can tell by their Toy to Life game, Lego Dimensions. You can Lego everything. So I wouldn't doubt you would see a Batman Superman Lego or a Ghostbusters Lego based on the new film. So that is a possibility in that regard. So there you go.
Cool, man. man. Well, thanks, guys, and I appreciate you helping
us. We appreciate you listening, and thanks so much for calling.
Thanks.
All right, we're going to take a break here. When we come back, we're going to have an interview with Barry Mead from Fireproof Studios, talking about The Room and The Room 2 and Room 3 and a bunch of other stuff as well that they've done. So that is coming up in the next hour. Amber, thank you so much for coming by.
You're welcome.
And hopefully we'll see you again. Thank you so much. And we'll be right back with more of In-Game Chat right after this. Music from Ninja Turtles. I believe this is going to be the NES days here. We'll be right back. Welcome back to In-Game Chat. On the phone with us, well, not really on the phone, on Skype with us right now. We're talking to Barry, and I believe your last name's Mead, is that correct?
That's right, yeah, Barry Mead.
Yeah, Barry Mead from Fireproof Studios, the makers of The Room, and he is on the line with us now. We're going to be talking to him about The Room, and The Room 2 and The Room 3, and just the amazing thing that is The Room. But before we get started with that, while I was looking up some stuff on you guys, I did not realize that pretty much most of the entire team, you guys are all from Criterion?
Yeah.
What time frame were you guys with Criterion?
What era?
Yeah, I know. Was it like Burnout 3 Takedown, or was it Burnout Revenge?
Yeah, we started on Takedown, and then we were the main art team for Revenge and Paradise.
Man, you really... I know we're supposed to talk about The Room, but you have no
idea. That's fine. We're very proud of those games.
Oh, you have no idea how much of a fan I am of those games.
Cool.
I actually got to visit Criterion for...
No way.
I did. It was for their Need for Speed run that they were doing when the first Need for Speed that they worked on was coming out. I got to visit their studios right next to the casino. Right there. I don't know. Were you?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Were you there when it was? I guess you've been there when it was in. Was it? It's like downtown Guildford or something. I mean, it's in that little. I don't know if it's downtown. I don't know what that area is.
Yeah, it's pretty much the center of town. Yeah, that was our office. That was where we worked from.
Yeah, I brought my copy.
I mean, we were gone by then, but
I brought my copy of Paradise there. Got the entire team to sign it.
No way.
Oh my.
Dude, we were literally like 3 minutes from you.
Oh God. Oh, man, I wish I could. You know, another strange thing, this is how big of a fan I am, is that way back when, this is completely off topic, way back when Spike, or I think it was Spike TV, was doing the Video Game Awards. I think it was one of their first, it was either the first iteration of that or the second. They did this big giveaway stuff, and they were giving away like a Halo standee signed by Bungie and all this other stuff. And they gave away this shadow-boxed copy of Burnout 3 Takedown, and it was real nice. It was all set up. The game was there. The disc was all in there. It was all in the shadow box, and it was all signed by like Matt Webster and a couple other guys or something like that. And anyway, I found that on eBay and I bought it.
Right.
And now it hangs up on my wall. I have no idea who the guy that's audited. Like, it says to somebody from whatever. I have no idea who the somebody is, but the person was selling it, so I bought it just because.
Wow, man!
I'm that big of a fan of the Burnout series. So finding out that you guys were, worked on Burnout and now are working on my other favorite types of games, which are puzzle-centric type things.
Really? Right. Okay.
Is just. It's just wonderful to me, you know. it's like, you know, putting syrup on bacon or something. It's just great.
That's great.
Two great tastes that taste great together, so it's fantastic. Thanks for doing this interview, by the way.
No problems. My pleasure.
I really appreciate this. There's a few of us on the show who have been huge fans, and the fan base keeps growing because we keep talking about these games. the breakaway from Criterion to go and start Fire, I mean, was that the initial thing? Was like, we're going to go off and do our own studio because we want to make puzzle games? Or we just, what was the situation? What was the cause of getting out from Criterion, and what was the formation of Fireproof for?
We've been at Fireproof for 5 years pretty much then. I mean, most of us had, like, there was six of us who started Fireproof. And we were basically the lead artists on at the studio, we were the world team, right? So we designed and built all the worlds and the racetracks and everything. That was our main job on the game. And I think we'd it got bigger and bigger, you know, after EA bought us out. The job just got bigger and bigger, and the teams got bigger and bigger, and much of your working day began to be given over to, you know, meetings or planning things or writing documents or justifying decisions or, you know, making presentations. And it really got away from the development side of things, which is not only is it the most interesting, it's also the thing that matters the most. And it became, just not quite as good a place to work. I mean, we always enjoyed working there. It was a very, very hard place to work, but we always enjoyed it because we enjoyed making really good games, and we really felt like Burnout was a great game. So we were, you know, that gave us a lot of sort of impetus to stay there and keep working. But I think at the end of Paradise, we thought, well, you know, we've probably run our course here. We're not really going to learn much more. And there was also the possibility that the team were beginning to start to get broken up, and we had been on the Burnout team, you know, for years and years, and didn't really want to go and work on some random game. You know, we were like, we felt part of the Burnout team. We thought maybe that would happen if we stayed at EA, so we wanted to stay together. We thought we worked really well together. We got on really well, and we were really good collaborators, you know. So we thought, well, what if we left, you know? Well, I think initially we thought we could go to another company and stay together, you know, like, you know, go up to some other big game studio and say, hey, do you want to hire all six of us as a, you know, a world team or whatever? But our other option was, what if we went freelance and just hired ourselves out as freelance environment guys to other studios? So that's what we decided to do. But then we thought, you know, we always did it with a mind to, let's make this business work so we can make our own game one day. That was really what we wanted to do. And so, yeah, we took that leap. And then about a month after we formed the company, the world economy crashed and all the money went out of video games. that was fun. That was something to be reckoned with. So anyway, things have changed hugely since then. You know, I mean, this was just as mobile was starting to come in as a gaming platform. And obviously back then it was all just PC and console. So yeah, it's changed a lot, even in the last, you know, 6 years we've been together, 7 years.
And how did, and so you've formed the studio now, and then it's like, okay, well, what should we make? I mean, is that how you just sit around a table and decide and brainstorm, like, hey, what kind of game do we want to make?
Oh, well, that came much later. I mean, we had 4 years of being freelance artists, right? So we started with the six of us, and we just used to hire ourselves out as freelance.
What were some of the games that you guys worked on in that time period?
Oh, we worked on Killzone. We worked on Little Big Planet a lot. We worked on
Sony-centric?
It's kind of Sony-centric. I suppose so. We also we worked on a bunch of racing games. We worked with the Flat Out guys. We worked with it was kind of quite a spate we went through. A lot of them actually aren't around anymore, as you probably well know.
Yeah.
We also did Blur, if you know Blur.
Oh, I know Blur, yes. I know Blur. I loved Blur's opening.
Yeah.
So the opening cinematic of Blur, when it does the little slow-motion car flip thing while it's playing that awesome soundtrack. I loved Blur. Blur, I had so much fun in the I don't know if it was the beta or whatever, the demo or something, where everybody got to play.
Yeah.
And oh God, fantastic game.
They were a great team. Really, really skillful guys. They made some great stuff.
It did the episodic thing, didn't it?
Blur.
Didn't it, like, whenever you signed back up or came back in, it's like, previously on Blur, this happened or something like that, and then...
Oh, I don't know, actually.
Maybe I'm thinking of Split Second. I'm sorry. I'm thinking of Split Second.
Right. Yeah, they came out more or less at the same time and were very similar games, yeah. But we did a lot of work with that team as well. So, and we also did a lot of design work. which is one of the things that made us unusual. We didn't want to make assets for video games. We wanted to sort of continue our roles in Criterion, but outside for other people. So we tried to be less a bunch of asset knockers for studios and more like an adjunct to their internal art studio. So that we, you know, so that instead of giving us jobs, which is just like, okay, build, you know, 10 cars or build like 50 buildings, whatever, that they would give us the really gritty work that their internal team does, like the design stuff from the ground up. So we did like R&D work for the studios. We did lots of design work. We created pitch documents for them to take to publishers. Like we did everything that an internal art studio would. We did all of those things for our own clients, really. So that was, I guess, how we managed to survive. Because normally when you're doing outsourcing work, you survive through scale, right? You take on contracts and you hire people to fulfill those contracts and you just grow and grow and grow. And we didn't want to do that because we wanted to make games eventually. And we didn't want a team of 100 artists sitting around with nothing to do while we were trying to make a video game. So we kept the studio boutique. And, you know, in the 4 or 5 years we were going, we went from 6 to 13, I think, over those years. So we kept it very small and hired really good people and only took jobs that wouldn't kill us, you know, that wouldn't stretch us. But the flip side of that was we never made any money. And we knew that if we were, you know, eventually it came to dawn on us that if we were ever to make a video game on our own, no one's going to give us that money. We'd have to actually raise it ourselves. And so we kind of were for a period looking at, well, this just isn't going to happen, is it? And then mobile and Unity happened, and that really opened it up for us because it made it possible for people to just make a game on their own and upload it to an app store and then see what happens. And we thought, well, we should at least try that rather than just try nothing. Even though we know nothing about mobile, we don't play mobile games, we don't know anything about, you know, that world, we thought, well, we have to make something, so let's make it on this platform that allows us to do that. And so we decided to take everything we had and spend it on hiring a programmer and having that programmer work with the team we basically had enough money to hire one programmer and put one of us offline for a year so the two of them could go and work up ideas for us. And that's basically how the room got made. Was we hired Rob, we started working in January, we did one game idea in January, put it to the side, went on to another game idea in February. We liked that idea so much that we just kept making it.
What was that? What was that idea that spawned?
That was the room. It became the room. At the time, it was just called Puzzle Box.
Oh, okay.
And so the idea behind the game was basically Mark, our creative director, had an idea that what if we got like Chinese or Japanese puzzle boxes and made them into digital versions? And I always remembered Zenbound back in the day, which was a great, really beautiful looking mobile game that came out that really showed off 3D on touch screens and how that's a little bit magical. So, we had confidence in that idea as well, but we did the first game we did was more like, it was a bit like actually Angry Birds Space, which came out much, much later, but it was kind of that same idea where you use the gravitational pull of planets to slingshot a rocket ship across space to land on another planet. It was a very simple, very shallow kind of cartoony mobile game. Worked on it just for 4 weeks just to get an idea of it. Then we went on to a second idea, which was Puzzle Box. And that just worked immediately. Like as soon as we had something working within a couple of weeks, we knew immediately that it was good. And we just never stopped making that game.
Yeah.
And that, you know, went on to become The Room. But it was never The Room at the start. The start, it was a much more basic idea, I guess.
Well, I mean, you nailed something that atmospheric, beautiful, fun to...
Yeah, we wanted to make that a big part.
Yeah, fun to play.
Be very immersive.
Massively immersive. And so much so that there's some questions here. We got a question from a listener. Kathy writes in and asks... Well, she says, I know Fireproof is working on a VR game for PS4 VR. Is that true, actually?
Well, we've already made one and published a VR game for the Gear VR, which I think is what she's referring
okay.
to.
Okay, is there any...
Yeah, we made that... mid last year, early last year, and it was called Amiga Agent. And we're going to port to the Rift and to the Morpheus, so maybe that's what she's referring to.
Yeah, I was gonna there was gonna be my next question. Obviously, with the announcement today of the price of the HTC Vive.
Yeah! Wow! Wow! All I can say.
Well, I mean, is it that much of a sticker shock for you when the Rift was released?
I'm not gonna say I'm surprised.
Yeah.
But I am disappointed.
Oh, you're disappointed?
Yeah.
Oh, were you looking? I mean, you've obviously, you know, dipped your head into the VR pool for a bit. What are your thoughts on it?
I think VR has so much potential. Like it really has so much potential, but it's hard to know whether what that means, whether that potential be realized. And by that I mean whether or not we're at this VR as it is now is just the start of VR. Or this is actually it. Do you know what I mean? Like so that all the problems and issues that it has at the moment will be with us for a while or whatever. But I think all of us at Fireproof, we just think VR has just got so much potential to create new experiences for people that you can't ignore. Like, forget about the metrics of stuff and, you know, the financial logistics of it. It's so brilliant when it really works that it's hard to ignore, and it's hard to imagine this isn't really going to take off in some way, but we just like to be realistic about it, right? We love the tech, we want to do as much work in it as we can, I think, but we realize that the market won't be there, you know, it's not going to be there for a couple of years, and yeah, I hope that that's the way everybody thinks about it. It's a long-term project,
right? The first step on a very long road right now.
Exactly, yeah.
But do you, she goes on to ask, any possibility of converting the room to VR?
It's always possible. I mean, it's something we've thought about ever since VR came along. We've always put it off, though, until controllers came along, because we didn't want to make a room which was just like a slideshow kind of thing. We wanted it to have the same interactions as the game does on mobile and PC. So, but now that the controllers are there, now it's a much more interesting proposition. So yeah, it's something that we think is certainly possible.
Well,
and yeah, we would like to work with people to make it happen.
I'm telling you, the moment I was able to experience VR itself, because I've been to a few E3s now, and I've tried every iteration of the Rift that keeps being produced, and finally got to try the retail version along with their controllers.
Yeah.
And I've also tried the Vive with their controllers as well. And
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, putting,
doesn't it add a lot?
Oh my God. Yeah. Seriously, the Vive does the room scale stuff. And if you can put the room inside a room scale thing where I can walk around the object.
Well, we actually made a demo of the room for the reveal of the Vive at E3 last year.
Wow, I did not.
So there was a demo called, we called it the Room Archives, and it was, unfortunately, you couldn't interact with it because we had very limited time to do it, so we couldn't get the interaction done for it. But what it is like you're sort of in the center of a chamber, and then around this chamber is pedestals, and on each pedestal is an object from one of the room games.
Okay.
And then when you walk towards the object, your whole environment changes around you to be that room that was actually in the game.
Ah, okay.
So if you imagine the ship from the room two, mm-hmm. You walk towards that, and then your whole environment changes into be you're actually in the ship.
Right.
So it's just a really, you know, it's something we know the game lends itself to, and so we'd like to see it happen at some stage.
The other question that she had was, she pretty much figures I was going to ask it anyway. Will there be more chapters for the room?
As in, will there be more room games?
That's going to be my guess. Yes.
I don't think we'll ever leave the room alone completely.
Oh, thank you for saying that. I love you.
But that's not to say we're onto the room for already, but, I think we'll always want to do work. Just in that universe, because we really like it, you know, it really appeals to us. I know that you know, you can get burnt out making the same thing for many years, but we're not lost.
Well, good. Trust me. I'm not going to get burned out playing the same thing. Please, just give me. It was like burnout. You know, it's like you don't have to change anything. Just give me more.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to come up with new ideas or anything or new mechanics.
Well, you say that, but you know, people really. It's always a balance. You always have to do like 50% new and 50% the same, really. Like other people will definitely want us to change it up, but then other people really like the familiarity of it. So it's always a balancing act.
I don't mind the change ups. Yeah, I could take either way, honestly, just as long as I have another box to dissect and another, you know, thing to figure out.
Fair
That's
enough.
All. Just keep it going that way. I've played the room. It's weird how I do this things, and I've talked to Rand Miller at
Right.
Cyan Worlds.
Yeah.
The guys who did Myst, and I said, you know, I told him, because I'm a huge fan of that franchise, and I said, you know, I haven't played Myst 5 yet, because if I don't play it, then it's never over. And so one of the things that I do with your games is I hold on to them for a good while, and usually I would play them on a plane trip over to L.A. for E3 or Seattle for PAX or something like that.
Yeah, it seems to be a popular plane game.
Yeah, and I'd fire that up on a plane ride because it makes the time go by massively fast.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
And you don't worry, you know, you're not thinking about how much your butt hurts because you're sitting on a plane for six hours.
Yeah.
So it's just really fun to dig into those games. So I would always I would always wait until like the sequel is out before I would play the one previous, because it would always leave me with like, oh good, there's more for me to play and I don't have to wait. However, I'm done with Room 3, all the endings, and so now I wait for more. But you know, it is fun to go back and replay those as well. How did the after Room 1, and I guess a success that you guys could see, what was the idea was, hey, let's jump back into this environment, or let's try something different, or what was the idea after the room to go back into that series and do a sequel, or was that planned from the beginning?
No, it wasn't planned from the beginning. I mean, the initial impetus going back and doing it was, holy shit, we just made $1 million. So there's one impetus. But no, we were just overjoyed that the game saw any success at all. Like, you have to remember, like, we had no money to spend on marketing or PR or anything. Like, the game is literally, we were making it, and there was nothing else we could do to make it popular other than make it. But Apple liked it so much that they featured it, and that gave it a huge kick in the ass. And so the game took off after that. But honestly, we did not at all in any way feel like we were done by the end of the first game, like not by a long shot. Like, we really felt like there was so much more we could have done if we'd had more time. We thought we did a really good job on the first one, considering the time we had. Like, we were very proud of it and still are. But the sign of a good game idea is that it inspires other ideas, and The Room was one of those, and it still inspires ideas in us today. Like, so it's it just keeps giving, so we'll keep taking it.
Yeah.
I guess you'd say we really like, and I even at the end of the Room 3, we asked the rest of the team, like, you know, because as directors, we're happy to make it, even though we still want to do other projects and have others on the go now, but we are not bored with it, and so, but we don't know, maybe everyone else isn't like that, so we asked the team, like, what would you like to do now? And you know, a lot of them said, can we do another room game? So yeah, it's good. It's good.
I love your team. That's so fantastic. Thank them for me, from me and plenty of other people. Thank them for wanting to do another one. This comes from Nathan, one of the guys on our show. How long does the average level take to create? And I guess I don't know how you define a level. It was easier to define a level in the Room 1, but when you started to expand in Room 2 and Room 3.
I mean, it's hard to say that, actually, because they all tend to progress throughout development. So it's not like we knock one on the head, say, that's done, let's move on to the next one. They're kind of all going at the same time. And maybe not, say, if we have 6 chapters, like, we might not have 6 going, but we might have 4 going at any one time. So it's very hard to quantify that, actually. Like, some of them will have taken, if the room took, Room 3 took a year and a half, then some of those chapters would have taken a year and a half, and then others would have been done in 6 months.
Well,
so,
how long was the development of the room, and then how long was the development of Room 2, and how long was the development of Room 3?
The Room 1 was 7 months with 2 guys on it full time, and then the other guys in the team helping out when they can, and, you know, when they're not doing contract work or after hours or and then so that was yeah seven to 8 months probably in total. And then the room two I think took us about a year. And then room three took us a year and a half.
Oh, do you expect then the next to take what, 2 years? Or I mean, how do you I don't know. Do you have, well, you probably have no idea, but yeah.
I mean, the thing is we made Amiga Agent while we were making room three, so you know, it's not like we're slacking off. Like we've released four full games in just over 3 years, so we've done pretty good. Let me go back to your question again.
Just how long it took between?
Yeah.
And how long do you expect maybe the next one to be made? But that's all dependent.
I don't think we'd want to spend much more than a year and a half making one. If we could make one sooner, we would. We might even go back to, like, we've talked about the idea of doing a simpler version of the game, which isn't quite the same, but is less intensive to make. Just a little bit lighter touch, I guess, on the development side to make. And luckily, it's the kind of idea, the center of the game is the kind of idea that lends itself to different interpretations. So, we're quite happy to play with that as it is, right? To play with what a room game is and come up with something else. Because it's not just about keeping it interesting for us, but also we don't want to bore the audience, you know. And that was something that Burnout tried to do, right? We knew that everyone loved Burnout 3, but we were not going to make two more Burnout 3s all over again. We're not going to spend 4 years making Burnout 3 again and then again. That does nobody any good. And people, it's obviously good to, you know.
Yeah, except now everybody wants to go back to Burnout 3.
Sorry?
Except now everybody, you know, they're like, oh, Paradise was great. Boy, I missed that Burnout 3, though. I wish they'd go back to that. There's a lot of people.
Exactly right. But after some time,
yeah,
you need that. Right, everything needs to settle down a bit. You can't just constantly remake Burnout 3, because it would have bankrupted us, really. If not financially, then it would have bankrupted us as a creative team.
Yeah.
You just can't do that because what does that say about your central idea? That it's not good enough to stretch in numerous directions. It should be, and you should try and do that because you kind of owe it to the audience to do that, right? To not sit in your laurels and not remake the same game all over again. It has to be something new about it. Have to change it up in some way. And so that they're surprised like they were with the first one. See, the thing is, when you make a game one, the reason people love it is it's a surprise. It's all new. So game two, game two and three will never get the same amount of love as those games because the surprise is gone. It doesn't matter how well you make
them. Right.
Right. So it's a frustrating thing for developers to know. Like, developers frequently spend, way more money and much more time and try much harder on the sequels than they do on the originals. And yet, after three or four iterations down the line when they've killed themselves, people say, I really love the first one. But this is the way it works. You to keep the same level of interest, you have to totally knock it out of the park the next time around, even just to keep the same level of interest. Because the surprise is gone, and surprise is a huge factor in the success. Mm-hmm.
Well, in sense of a lot of entertainment type stuff like that. I've said before that if I could have one superpower, it would be a selfish one, but it would be one that could erase my memory of anything I've ever enjoyed, so that I could go back and experience it all over again.
Yeah.
And have that factor of, oh my God, this is the greatest thing ever. And enjoy that. Although, my memory is not what it is, or what it once was. So, playing the room on PC, I don't remember the solutions. Going all the way.
Okay, yeah, that's interesting. I wonder, was it the fact that he was on a different platform that shifted your memory even more away from the?
It's possible, but it's possible that it did that. It's just been a while since I played the room one, and there it is on PC, and I'm like, the puzzle's familiar, but I don't remember this solution.
Yeah. So. No, that's fine. Yeah, it makes sense.
Of the PC versions, you guys gonna do any more of those?
Yeah, we want to do two and three. Actually, it'd be nice to get them out in 2016. Actually, be one way we're looking at it. So. That's definitely on the cards. We have a lot of stuff that we'd like to do, but as I say, we don't like hiring lots of people for the sake of it. just for business reasons. So we tend to be slow.
We march
through our ideas. You know, eventually we get around to doing them all, but probably slower than people would want. And you know, we have a lot of options. Like, you know, there's a lot of things we could port the game to. We could port it to console. We could do all of them on PC. We're constantly, you know, refreshing and making sure that the iOS and the Android apps work really well as well. So there's a lot of upkeep. And then, you know, at the same time, we're trying to think of new games to do and new projects to take on. And you know, they're also monsters. So we're a small team and we keep it small. And it means that things like this aren't quite so easy for us to get out. But yeah, we do what we can.
What is the size of your team?
We're 14 people now.
Okay. And I'm sure it's fluctuated as games have been built. So what is the, during any of the development of any of these games, what was the max size and what was the minimum size?
The most we were was 70. Actually, I think we're actually 15 now. Come to think of it. 17 was our
and least. And the least amount that you had working on one of these was what?
Oh, well.
Probably back on room 1, I would imagine.
Yeah, I remember with the room 1, we were all still freelancers, and we were doing this kind of off hours. So only Mark and Rob were working on the game full time. So that's 2, effectively, I guess, because they.
What is your favorite puzzle game?
My personally.
Well, yeah, and yours. We'll start with that. If you know some of the other team's favorites, we'll go into that. But what's your favorite personally? What is your favorite puzzle game?
I was never mad about puzzle games, I would say. Like, I was never a freak, like a fan of them. I didn't seek them out. So I'm much more of just a generalist gamer, and I play all kinds of games from all genres. So...
What game do you find yourself going back to, regardless of genre? What game do you find yourself going back to more often than others to play?
I would say most of my gaming hours. I love open world games. I really like strategy games. I really like Civilization and Total War as well, so I'm kind of a PC geek, really. Mm-hmm. That would probably.
Have you tried out that XCOM 2?
Yeah. I'm on it now. I'm on it right now. Yeah. So I love XCOM. I love the first one. I finished it on iOS and PC. And so yeah, kind of just starting to on the second one now. But yeah, I'd say I've sunk the most hours into open world games like Skyrim and Fallout. But also strategy games like Civilization, Crusader Kings 2, mm-hmm. Total War, those kind of games.
Another question from Nathan is, are there any extra Easter eggs scattered throughout all the games?
No, there isn't. There is details you can notice, which I guess you could call Easter eggs, to do with the characters in the game. So there's some characters who are mentioned in the first, you know, and then are brought through into other games.
For example?
Did you recognize Maggie in the third game?
I don't think I did.
So,
maybe. I don't think so.
Do you remember, in the room 3, there was this automaton that gave you the cards?
Right.
So she's Maggie from the first game, who's in the posters and the letters.
Oh, wow.
Between the protagonists. Maggie's one of the protagonists.
Had no idea. No, did not.
So things like that are in there, which is just for people who, you know, to pick up on. And then her fate is pretty grim if you pay attention to what the letters say in the room 3. It doesn't end up good for Maggie. Mm. So things like that are in there. But they're not conscious Easter eggs, I guess you'd say. They're just... I suppose grabbing the layers of the world and the story and then trying to reuse them again in interesting ways in the other games, just so there's, you know, to bring the continuity through and whatever.
You guys did a fantastic job with 3. Did you guys hire an actor for that first part when you're looking through the door?
No. We do all of the live action stuff in all the games we do ourselves. We just dress up in costumes.
That's fantastic.
So that guy was Mark dressing up as the craftsman. Mark is our creative director, and so we bought a mask and just got some shoddy clothes and threw them on him and just filmed him against a green screen, and the same with the seance in the second game. Mm-hmm. All of the characters in that is like it's me and Mark and Mark's wife and a couple of other. Actually, I think there's a few partners of other people in the company, just all dressed up in Victorian clothes, you know, just had a laugh one day putting it all together. So no, we try and do all of that stuff ourselves, all our CG and live action stuff ourselves.
You guys ever given any thought to doing a nice horror game?
Hell yeah. Are you kidding me? Jesus, yeah, we love horror games.
Because you throw some aspects in these games that are a little bit like that train ride at the beginning of 3.
Yeah,
it was a nice little what was that? And then from then on, you're set to possibly have it happen again. You don't
that's
know.
Right. Yeah, that's right. We do that on purpose, frankly. That's all pretty conscious. If you listen to the audio soundtrack, that's one way that will sort of is a good example of that. Where this was established in the room one. The audio soundtrack, right? So you have the music and whatever, and then you have incidental tunes that would come on or little.
Yeah, you'd have. You also have ambient things, noise.
But then you have ambient noise, exactly. And the ambient noise was put in basically to unsettle the player, like literally to make them think, hang on, did I just hear something while I'm doing this creepy puzzle? Mm-hmm. Just to sort of get their imagination going a bit and to immerse them more in the game. So some things like that are conscious, where we're trying to, you know, slightly creep the player out. It's not a horror game, like horror. Obviously, there's no gore or anything like that. But we were shooting for creepy. We want the game to be creepy. And so we like that. So, but we've always wanted to make a proper horror game. And, you know, I think one day in our bones, we all feel like we will.
Well, I look forward to it whenever that does come about. So, the future, we can expect at some point another Room game, huh?
Certainly, between now and infinity, yes, I would say that's definitely.
Oh, thanks. Now infinity, sure. Yeah, we'll do another one. I'm curious where you guys go with the story, because, you know, I really didn't expect that this story would carry over. I figured maybe it would be some kind of like a not necessarily an anthology series, but something where it's different each time. But you guys have kept the thread going.
We did.
And then you gave us multiple endings in Room 3. Yeah. And so I'm curious how you build off of that. As I understand it, if we keep everything and no spoilers here, by the way, but if I understand it, if we keep everything intact, there looks to be only one ending from those five where you could proceed with the story.
Maybe. Yeah. Well, yeah, you're right. But I mean, you could argue they're all closure.
Well, no, there are some that are just that seem to be extremely. Well, I don't know. I don't know that they're all closure, especially on that one.
Well, it could be like, this is your fate. Suck it.
Yeah.
You know, like that's closure. but you're right. They're all supposed to be slightly suggestive, right? And even with the even if you got like a resolution at the end of the Room 3, like completely of the storyline or whatever, the actual background to all of that is vague enough that you can kind of keep it going, because there's other characters that you can bring in and out of the storyline that, you know, feature heavily in some and then aren't in there at all in others. So the actual world and the universe of the room is really what matters. And so we would be just as interested in making another Room game that doesn't feature the Craftsman or AS or any of that.
Yeah, it just goes in a different direction. Yeah.
Exactly, but it's still the same. You know, you would realize very quickly it's the same universe and they have something in common, and, you know. So we're perfectly willing to do that. And we'd kind of always thought a trilogy was a nice way to round it up. So the end of the Room 3 is kind of supposed – is not – the end of the room, it's the end of that story, that thread of that particular part of the storyline.
Well,
we looked at it that way. But yeah, it's you're never supposed to know in the room. We don't really want the player to know. We want them to just kind of think and expect and interpret and whatever, but not really to know resolutely one way or the other about any of the things that are going on in the game. So the storyline, you know, it doesn't have a story narrative like other games do. It's more like a sprinkling of interesting things that are going on in the game world to keep the player interested and to keep them guessing. But we prefer the player to be in that guessing state than in the state of knowing anything.
Well, you guys did a fantastic job. It is loved by I cannot tell you how much I enjoy these games. Have you guys been approached by any game companies? You know, obviously Criterion was sitting out there by themselves, and then they got bought. Mm. I mean, have you guys been approached by anyone to say, "Hey, we like what you're doing. We'd like you to make games for us," or anything like that?
You mean as in like people trying to buy us?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, I mean, I'm not going to ask any more details other than that. Just was curious if that had come across.
Yeah, it's happened a few times.
Yeah, well, yeah. Don't do anything. Just stay here. I don't want the same thing to happen to you guys that happened to Criterion now, which is, oh God, I'm.
Well, we've been there too, yeah. Right? So just remember.
I know.
We ain't going back there. I mean, there's a. This is not to say it was all bad, whatever, but just that we'll never go back to becoming a big office with lots of people. And, you know, that's just never really going to happen. And we're always going to try and come up with game ideas that we can make, that Fireproof can make, that are very, you know, almost the kind of, we kind of want to make the games that only Fireproof could make. And by that, I mean, that respond to the tastes of the people who make up the company.
It's a company's got a soul. It's got these people that make it what it is. And
yeah, exactly. And having that, you know, trying to put yourself into your games is always a good idea. You know, you should do that, because not only does it, you know, make you more happy as you're making the game, and it's easier for ideas to come, and it sort of promotes creativity, and whatever. But also it by default makes you different to the next team over, mm-hmm. right? But whatever you do, we'll have those idiosyncrasies in there that the other team can't have because they're not you, right? So, I know this. It's a common argument that you shouldn't do that. You should really be playing to the crowd effectively, right? And do what the audience wants, and all of that is really important. I've never, you know, I'm a massive advocate for doing things for making business decisions based on what an audience like, but. You also have to, I think, put yourself into your game, and you have to come up with games that you particularly want to make and play, because that comes across in the screen to people, you know, in a sort of intangible way, but it does. Like, any love that you put into it, it's easier to see that come back out of the screen than people who are playing it. So, we think it's quite important, really, to come up with stuff, ideas that fire the team who are making it in particular, because they'll probably do a pretty good job if they really, really believe in it.
Well, that is one of my favorite answers, actually, that I've ever heard. Not that I've asked that question a ton, but that is a fantastic answer to that sort of question. And one we should probably leave off on, because it's very, very good. So, Barry, I want to thank you for joining us and for being on the show and for giving us your time.
No problem at all. Thank you. I hope it was worthwhile.
Oh my God, you have no idea. For me, as a huge fan, getting to interview since you were what, three doors down from when I got to visit, this is the next best thing for me, is just to get to talk to you. So.
Oh, no worries. Thank you. You're very kind.
And thank you so much. We've been talking with Barry Mead from Fireproof. Studios or Games? Which one is that? I want to get it right.
Games. Yeah. Studios is the company, but Games is the label.
All right. That's Fireproof Games. Thank you so much once again. We do appreciate it. And The Room 2, and The Room 3, all available on iOS. The Room is also available on PC, on Steam.
Yeah.
And on Android as well. They're all available there also. So make sure you check them out. Barry, thank you again.
Not at all. Thank you, Scott.
We'll be right back with more of In-Game Chat right after this.